if you have a teammate that's doing an unwanted behavior, we want to figure out the exact thing that happens right before the behavior occurs or right where the behavior is occurring. And then we want to try to trade it for a different behavior. How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build. Resistance is a normal part of change. Becoming aware of how you and your team resist is your job as a leader. And so what I like to say is you are response-able for your team. What does response-able mean? Yes, it's cheesy, but like, hear me out here, okay? Our responses are always available for us to choose. We are not defaulted into any response from any other reason, right? Like, we get to choose how we respond to a situation. Nothing makes us feel or do anything. Oftentimes, we do that by focusing on the past, focusing on what we could lose. And despite circumstance, our behavior is up to us. No matter what has happened, maybe it's COVID, maybe the marketplace has changed, maybe AI is putting you out of business. Despite any of those circumstances, how you behave and what you do next in front of your whole team while they're watching is completely up to you. And so resistance is actually a choice. Why? Because it requires active focus on the past. It's not passive. You're not accidentally thinking about the past. You are choosing not to make it harder to focus on the past than easier to focus on the future. And so as a leader, our response is most impactful to how everyone else is going to do that. And at the end of the day, if you choose to continue to relive the past, indulge in the past, wonder why it's not like it was in the past, your team will do the same. And so the question becomes, how do we help our teams manage that change? So I picked this model up from one of my friends. Her name is Brooke, and she has what you call the thought model. And I think I discovered it like 7 years ago, and I still use it because I think it's a great model. There's probably like 10 different ways that you could display this and you could walk it through, but essentially it's part of like behavioral psychology. And so the thought model is that there's a circumstance, and the circumstance leads to a thought. That thought leads to a feeling. That feeling leads to a behavior, and that behavior leads to the results you have in your life. Let me give you some examples. So change is a circumstance. You have a circumstance of some kind of change. Let's say that it's Facebook shut me down and now I've got to move platforms for my business. And your Facebook, I have people who know how to do Facebook. I don't know anyone who knows how to do TikTok. Like, I'm going to have to get all new teammates. The next thing you have is you have a thought, and your thought is, this is hard. And you focus on that thought. And the more you focus on that thought, the more you start to feel helpless. And then because you feel helpless and you have not diffused yourself from a feeling to an action, you shut down, you complain, and then you get the result of things continuing to be hard and not work. Let's give another one, an alternative circumstance. Same circumstance, let's say. But say that you have the circumstance and you have the thought, this is hard. This is hard. Now, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's hard. But because you have that thought, you then think, this is hard, but I can do it. And you feel motivated. So you have the thought, this is hard, but I can do that. How cool would that be? I feel motivated. And then what you do is you double down on making the new thing work. You double down on TikTok. You double down on LinkedIn. You double down on cold outbound, whatever it may be. And then the result is that you show yourself that change is possible. Last example, circumstance. Again, Facebook shuts you down. First thought, I can learn new things. What does that thought of I learn new things then make you feel? Makes you feel hopeful, like there's a brighter future. Wow, I get to acquire a new skill. This is really cool. A lot of people don't do this. And then because you feel hopeful, you listen, you engage, and you practice, and you learn the new thing, which then drives you to the result of learning the new thing and having the result you want in your business. And so what you see from this model is that there's really two places, in my opinion, and through all of my studying of psychology, of where intervention takes place. And from what I've seen, the two places where intervention makes the most sense is at the place of the thought or at the place of behavior. Now, my personal favorite is behavior, but I will talk about both alternatives because I think you just got to figure out what works for you. So we're going to walk through the thought model with how you would do this with a resistant teammate, somebody who doesn't want to follow out a change, somebody who doesn't like the new direction of the business, somebody who doesn't want to do the thing you're asking them to do. And we're going to identify the thought and the behavior. Then what you can do is you can use that to put in intervention tools to help facilitate change. So the next time you have to roll something out in your company, you can give this to your team, for one, so they understand, and then help them with the intervention. So let's say that we've got an intervention at B, which is behavior. So the first piece is we want to identify what actions of this person cause the unwanted result. Say we've got a cat. The cat is scratching the couch. And so the unwanted behavior is that the cat keeps scratching the damn couch. The second thing we want to do is, now that we've identified what the unwanted behavior is, let's determine the closest point of latency to interfere, and we will create a cue. Latency means the shortest period of time between the behavior and the thing. And so what we realize is that the cat is scratching the leg of the couch. And so if we want to interfere with the behavior, we should be interacting with the leg of the couch, not the entire couch. So the next piece is we want to swap the old behavior for a new one. How do we do that? Well, what if we put a scratch pad on the leg of the couch? And then when the cat scratches the scratch pad instead of the couch, we reinforce that new behavior. And eventually what you can do is you can move that scratch pad away from the couch after the cat has scratched enough times, and it will start to scratch the scratch pad and not the couch. This is also good if you actually have a cat, which I don't. So what we're doing here is we're identifying the behavior we don't want, and then we're seeing where we can interfere. Another example of this is if you have somebody who, for example, is overweight, and you're like, oh, I don't know why they keep overeating. Okay, well, what do they do right before they overeat? The closest point of interference, they open the refrigerator because it's always ice cream. Okay, could we put a note there? Could we put a lock there? How could we put just a little bit of either resistance or an alternative to create a lag between them trying to do the behavior and the behavior occurring? And so the same goes for teammates. If you have a teammate that's doing an unwanted behavior, we want to figure out the exact thing that happens right before the behavior occurs, or right where the behavior is occurring, and then we want to try to trade it for a different behavior. And so the easiest way to change an old behavior is to focus more on what to do in relation to what happens next. And so there's little time to think of what's lost. So for example, if you have a teammate that, say, you're changing direction and you realize that you need to move from being a D2C company to a B2B company. Say you've built a software and you've started to realize, you're like, holy crap, I think we serve enterprise customers. We don't serve direct to consumer. And I think we have to reorganize this whole software. And say you have a teammate that time and time again, even though they're the head of product, they continue to deliver you specs where the specs are all for D2C. So they're like for direct consumer software. And you're like, no, we're moving to enterprise, but like all the features that they're building are built in a way that only makes sense for direct consumer software. This does not make sense anymore. And so what do you want to do is you probably want to find out what that person does. You want to interfere by interfering with them right before they start to build out the spec. And so it could be something like a reminder, or it could be something like interference, or it could be something like a cue so that they focus on the new thing rather than getting rid of the old thing. And so like an easy one for this might be literally a cue of having a sticky note on the computer that says focus on B2B enterprise, B2B enterprise customer. B2B enterprise customer is king. And if you just have that sticky note on your computer, it's like, okay, it has interfered with the behavior. It has reminded me of where I want to go and what I want to focus on rather than what I don't want to focus on. So if you're going to try and get someone to change their behavior, again, like the cat, it's not like I told them, get off the couch, and I tried to spray them and deter them and hit them when they went to the couch. We just put something new in place. So it's more convenient to scratch the scratch pad than to go to the couch. And so if we distract somebody from the thing we don't want them to do, they're much more likely to do the thing we want them to do that we have used as a distraction tool. So that's the first place we can interfere to help people change, is at their behavior. Now, the second place that we can help people change is intervention at the thought, because there are going to be some people where they might be doing the behavior, but they're also saying, you know, I feel this certain way, or I'm thinking these thoughts. And so if we're intervening at the thought line, then we want to, one, identify what thoughts are causing the resistance. And so it might be, I don't want to change because it changes my job, and what if they fire me? That's the thought. Because I can tell you, like, a lot of the times when your team doesn't want change, it's because, like, you just follow this all around the end of the day. It's like, I'm going to get fired. That's what it is. That's like always the worst case fear. Now we label the thought for what it is. That's catastrophic thinking. Thoughts are not reality. Thoughts are just sentences in our mind. And so in this instance, I would tell somebody that sounds like a catastrophic thought. Like, again, how likely do you think that is that that's going to occur based on everything that's happening and based on what I'm saying right now, which is I'm not firing you. And then you have that person read it. You have them identify what kind of thought it is. It's not a true thought. It's a catastrophic thought. It's a lie. It's just a sentence in my brain that could also be completely false and made up. And so then once you've identified that thought, you want to trade it for a new one. Guys, I just want to take a quick break to thank all of you for listening to the show so far. If you enjoy what you're listening to, I would be so grateful if you would just consider leaving me a review or even sharing it with somebody who you think would love to hear the kind of content. As you can see, I don't run ads on here, so the only way that this show grows is if we can continue to make awesome content, and the only way I can do that is through you liking, subscribing, and rating. All right, let's get back to it. Now, here's the thing. I'm not a fan of like the hippy-dippy, talk yourself into like I'm Tony Robbins and the king of the world bullshit. Because if you trade that thought for one that is also equally unbelievable in the opposite direction, you're probably not going to stick there either. And so instead, you want to trade the thought for a new believable thought. One that you can, it's a little challenging, but it's logical. So it's like, this will be hard, but I am up for the challenge and I can learn new things in my job. That is a very healthy thought to have in that situation. It is also probably true. And then what you want to do is now that you've established and gone through this thought process with that person, you then figure out if you want them to act in accordance with the productive thought, you would have them immediately start a new behavior that reinforces that thought. And so maybe they start reading a book or you buy them a course on this new thing that they need to learn. For somebody who's scared of something, you would have them take, say somebody's scared of a spider. It's like you would probably have them, you know, like go in the same room as a spider. Like there's all sorts of things, but basically what you want to do is now that they have this new thought that they've agreed to, you reinforce the thought with a behavior. And so when we want to break a behavior, we want to break the relationship between the thought and the behavior. When we're trying to change it and we're trying to get rid of it. When we're trying to create a new one, we want to fuse them together. So we want to do the thing as quickly as possible after the thought. And so it's just equal opposites. So what this means is only a leader can make the difference between a team that is constantly excited for a new challenge and a team who cowers and resists a new challenge. So what I want you to do is I want you to think, what things have I resisted in my business? What change have I resisted? What change is factually correct and probably needs to happen, but I have continued to resist it because of my fear. And I want you to write that down. And I want you to actually even use that model to address the change with yourself, because it might be that the reason that you haven't changed is because it has to start with you before you can help your team do this. And so become self-aware of where you're at in this process. Understand that in order to change an organization's strategy, you must change the mindset and the behavior of all the people underneath of it. And that's usually the hardest part of business. So with all of those leaders in Gym Launch that were resisting the change, I was able to get about, I want to say 2/3 of the team on board with the new change. The way that I did that was my messaging. One, I got my own shit together and realized that I was resisting the change myself. I was trying to seek reassurance because I was scared of changing. And so I was trying to out-execute a strategic issue because I was afraid of the downstream repercussion, because I was afraid of the downstream repercussions. So once I realized that and I was like, okay, I'm committed to this and we need to change, I then brought my team through that journey that I had gone through. And I explained to them all the things that we've tried and that we've exhausted and the fact that I'm scared to make the change. That I was scared to make the change. And now I realize that I'm more scared of remaining the same because I realize what we're currently doing does not work. And I built an entire presentation that walked everybody through this. And then I went through and addressed all the fears that they might be having. And I talked about how those were unsubstantiated fears. And then I just addressed each one by one based on the departments and explained why they're not true. Now, I didn't make any promises that I couldn't make of like, you're absolutely going to have the exact same job. You know, you're going to be here forever. Like, I'm not changing either. Like, all these things. Like, I didn't promise anything that wasn't true. But I did promise what I could. And I reassured them of thoughts that were very unlikely to happen. And so because of that, I was able to get about 2/3 of the team on board. I will say that about 1/3 of my team was not on board. And I gave them the option at the end of the presentation. I said, for my leadership, take the next 48 hours to think about this, because then what I did is I essentially met with each leader and explained what it was going to mean for them. And I said, if you're not willing to do some of these things, then this isn't going to work. And I can't have a leader executing on a change who is not 100% on board, because they're going to sabotage it. And so I met with them all, and about 1/3 of them opted out. And I lost 1/3 of my leadership in the same month. And it was really hard. because then I had to lead those departments and try to replace those leaders, and then lost a ton of the teammates underneath because they didn't understand why we were changing. And what I understood during that time was that nobody else could see what I saw. Nobody else could see like how hard we were trying to make the current model we had work. And I understand that because they're not in my position where I oversee everything that's happening. But because of that, you know, I think a lot of people realized how hard it was going to be over the next however long. And there were some people that were just too scared to commit to it. And so I got people who on board who weren't scared of that. They were excited about the change. They were excited about the opportunity for growth and helping rebuild the company into something different and better than it was present day. And that ultimately is the reason that we were able to sell our company. And so when I talk about these things, a lot of people think like leading change, that sounds so soft and silly. But if you think about it like this, 66% of strategies that a business sets out to fulfill fail. What does that mean? It means that they are unable to change their business because a strategy, right? A new strategy is a change. Why are they unable to do that? Because the people do not change. And so change doesn't happen by deciding to change like some metric on paper or all of a sudden writing down a strategy. Change happens when every individual changes their behavior. Every department changes how they measure success. Every person changes the behaviors they do on a daily basis. And every leader changes the way they talk about these things to the team and what they reinforce. And so it was our ability to shift our business that allowed us to then make a business that was actually worth selling. Because at the end of the day, what we did and all the changes that we went through made the business 10 times stronger than it had ever been. We had leaders that were building and professionalizing their departments. We had a leadership team that was all on the same page. And we had a culture of people who would do anything to propel us towards the vision because they were hopeful of the future more than they were scared of losing what we had. I think for somebody who has a really small business, in the very beginning, there's a lot of change very quickly. But it's not even that you have more change than a big business. It's that you are the one absorbing all the change. So often it's just an illusion that there's more change because you as the founder, there's such few teammates that the same people absorb all the change. Whereas when you have a bigger business, I actually don't think that change slows down. I just think that more people absorb the change that happens. Therefore, it feels like less change.